Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America
of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. I hope everybody had an awesome Thanksgiving. Our guest this week had an awesome Thanksgiving, I'm sure, but it was way back in October because he is in the Great White North, and he is a longtime friend of the show. I was looking at the data earlier today, and he made his first appearance on the program October 14th, 2006. So over a decade ago, he first appeared on the show and then made many, many, many more appearances on the program, talking baseball, talking UFOs, talking about ghost hunting, which is what we're going to be getting into tonight. He even had his own special one year on Banal of America called Kimball of Canada, which I believe is like missing from the website. So maybe if I'm not too lazy this week, maybe I'll dig that up and get that back online, because that was like a massive interview we did. Talking, of course, about the illustrious Paul Kimball, filmmaker, TV star, author. I like to call him a paranormal pundit because he's never short on opinions when it comes to all this great stuff. And very interesting reaction from the audience. I was surprised. Some guy was like all a tither about it. I forget who it was, but he was like, ah! So in classic paranormal pundit form, he's already polarizing the audience. And every time we talk, it seems like he gets me thinking, and he's never afraid to sort of challenge my ideas or put ideas out there that I may not have considered yet. So it's a real thrill to get him back, and I think he may be the only person as excited about the final season as I am. Every time I cross paths with him on Facebook, it seems to come up. So he's been a huge, huge booster of this program over the years, and I can't thank him enough. And as I said, over the last few weeks with some of the guests we've had on, like Adam Gorightly and Bruce Rucks and guys we're going to have on going forward here, you know, these are the folks that they're not just guests, folks, and they're not even just friends at this point. They're like family, and they've been with me the whole way, and I want to make sure everybody gets a shot here as we close out the season, close out the show, Banal of America Audio. So welcome back to the show, Paul. Thank you so much for everything you've done for the show over the years, and, here's to one last ride, brother.
Sorry, I had to lead off with the Porg because I'm a Star Wars nerd, and Michael Reynolds left a comment on your, I think it was your Facebook wall, saying, because I have a toy Porg now for Star Wars fans, and he sings and dances and does other things, so I post pictures of him, and I just thought I'd lead off the show with the Porg making his Porg noises, because he's going to be huge, huge, I tell you, when The Last Jedi comes out. Thanks for that glowing introduction, Tim. Hopefully you can hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great, yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm just
cool.
Taken aback by the Porg. Is that the thing that looks seal in the commercial?
Yeah, it's sort of, it has a little bit of seal in them, but I think it's, that sounds wrong. But I think it's mostly, that's a very nice.
Kissed by a rose.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But sort of a bird kind of thing, like a plover or something like that, with sharp teeth and things. Very cute, huge. They're what the Ewoks should have been. So I've just fallen in love with them, even though I haven't even seen the movie yet. I've just seen them for like half a second in the trailers, but I love them already. Thanks for having me on the show. 2006. Wow. I was like still in my 30s.
I know.
Holy moly. And so like now,
well, this will put it in perspective for you. I was looking at that first episode we did, and it was at the very end of like the write up. It says, and then to close it out, we talk a little bit about Paul's some new project Paul's working on, UFOs, 10 top 10 best evidence.
Yeah.
So that was when that was in the concept stage, I guess.
That seems like such a long time ago, because it is. Frankly, part of me is surprised I'm still alive to be doing this show, because you just never know what's going to happen. The interesting thing for me is when I look back on it, two things sort of stand out to me in our relationship over the years. I mean, there's so many things, most of which we can't talk about in public. But one of them was I was doing a blog back then called, that was when I was doing my Other Side of Truth blog. And I remember I put up a column, I don't know, might have been 2005, 2006, and I said the top 10 young people, and I used young in quotation marks because I included Nick Redfern, who, you know, wasn't all that young. He was about 40 or 41. But let's just say people not as old as Stan Friedman.
Yeah, that's ufology
kind
young.
Of thing.
40
who will,
is ufology young.
Right, ufology young, I like that. Who will shape ufology in the years to come. And so, like, Pope was at number 3, and I think Redfern was number 2 or 1 or something like that. Greg Bishop was in there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I had you at number 9. We'd never met. We'd never talked. We'd interacted, I think, a couple times. But I remember offending. I mean, I offended Alfred Lemberg on a regular basis without even trying. But this really offended him because I wrote, Tim Binal is a marketing genius who will take ufology into the 21st century because he's putting his face on underwear. Because you were selling you had merchandise, like literally everything. I think you even really did have underwear. And I said,
Yeah.
And I said, I thought this was awesome. But Alfred Lemberg thought that I was slighting you somehow. And I said, I don't know how I could be slighting him. I put him on my top 10 list. This is one of the things he does. And nobody was doing podcasts back then. Like, this was an unheard of kind of medium in its very infancy. And so I said, this guy's on the cutting edge of this podcasting thing. And who knows how long it's going to last. But he's interviewing people that people want to hear. And he's on the cutting edge of ufological merchandising thing stuff. So, I mean, I'm just shocked that, like, Steve Bassett's face never wound up on underwear over the years. He could have learned something from you. I don't know how that didn't become a thing within ufology. And the other thing that stands out to me is you and I in a bar. Again, that's not really narrowing it down. In 2007, when you were up here for the Oak Island thing.
Yeah.
Oak Island days. And before we went down to Oak Island with Chris McBride, who's the narrator of Best Evidence, and Annie Briggs, a friend and actress of mine, and Graham Sims, right. We had a really good time down there. Tim and I went out drinking one night, and there's very little I can tell about that evening, especially I almost got us, by us, I mean me, kicked out of the office building where my office was. That's a long story. But
you were
in the process, as we were drinking, of and excuse me, folks, if I cough every now and then, it's because I'm getting over a cold. Sorry about that. But
no,
I have fond memories of you telling me that you were fed up with, you know, doing the podcast, and you thought, you know, I don't know, Kimball, like, I don't think I can do this anymore. I mean, who am I going to talk to? I've talked to everyone I want to talk to, and blah, it's not fun anymore. And I thought, wow, this guy seems really depressed by it all. I can't imagine that this is going to go on much longer. And here we are, 10 years
later.
Well,
in my defense, my father had just died like 3 months earlier.
No.
That was a dark summer for me.
Yeah, and I'm not knocking. I'm just saying, like, this is not a knock on you, but here we are 10 years later. You persevered, and you continued to turn out quality programming and occasionally programming with me on it. And, you know, it's nice to be here as you kind of wrap it all up. I'm honored.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. Like I said, you've been a huge booster of this show. And I remember that conversation. I think it was like I was trying to ease my way out of this, in a sense. which I guess I did kind of. You know, this because I really kind of took like last year almost entirely off. So it's like this last season sort of a final celebration of what we've done over the years. You know what I mean? And that's why it's like somebody on Facebook who clearly doesn't follow the show was like, you need to diversify your guests. It's like, yeah, dude, I got like 8 shows left. Let's start bringing in people I've never talked to before. Like, get the fuck out of here, man.
Diversify your guests. I mean, I don't want to know there are people who listen to your show who hate me, so I don't want to add to that list. But in terms of diversifying your guests, your show probably of all the podcasts has the most diverse guest list you can find. Like many shows, you know, the Paracast, for instance, focuses primarily on UFOs, and there are a lot of UFO podcasts out there, and maybe there's some of those who think you kind of do them all. So you've had Bigfoot people on, you've had ghost people on, you've had UFO people on, you've got Rux Giving, you would have Jim Mars on talking conspiracies. So you are like the potpourri of not, I was going to say paranormal, esoteric. You are the king of esoterica, and you have been for 11 years. Yeah, so it's not just a paranormal show, and I think people over the years have kind of gotten that wrong. Tim Benali does a paranormal podcast. Yeah, a lot of times it's paranormal. Other times it's talking about stuff that's not paranormal. It's more conspiracy-oriented or whatever. So, yeah, you know what? Bad on me. At number 9, I underranked you back then. I should have had you in the top 5. So if I could travel back in time, I'd tell my younger self, hey, he's not just underwear. He's not just a guy with his face on underwear. This guy is he's going somewhere. Put him in like number 4 or something.
Well, there you go. If we adjust for what's that like? If we adjust for like age inflation for ufology, and like I said, he's old, ufology old. If we adjust for normal age, I probably would move up to 4 or something anyway. So, but well, I one of my favorite shows I ever did was the Rumspringa episode. I think it might have been you that was talked about it a few times with me, but it's the one about Amish teenagers going off to experience the English world or whatever they call it, you know. And it was like, that has nothing to do with the paranormal, but it was like so fascinating to me.
Did you do an episode on and maybe I don't think I'm mistaking this, but I might have. It might have been a Coast to Coast episode for all I know, and I'm mixing them up. Did you do an episode on spontaneous combustion once, or am I thinking something else? Yeah, that's why.
No,
I
definitely did. Yeah. Well, one of my goals all along, and I think I only did the one show. I think I nailed it. That's kind of why I feel content in a sense, sort of wrapping things up is, I mean, I'm sure like, okay, yeah, maybe I didn't do like a show on a specific UFO case or something like that. But like, if you look back on it, you can pretty much I pretty much did every topic you could do in the paranormal. You know what I mean? I tried to do like an encyclopedic type show where it's like, we did a spontaneous human combustion show. We did Amelia Earhart. We did, you know, Bermuda Triangle. We did Jack the Ripper. We did like every possible, you know, I think I might've missed like the Zodiac Killer. I think that's how deep you have to go to really find something that we didn't get into on the show over the years.
Yeah. And I've started and stopped my own podcast over the years. I'll do 3 here, 2 there, whatever. And I don't think people maybe realize how hard it is to find people to interview, to get yourself up for interviewing, to do the research. I mean, a lot of podcasts don't even bother to do the research. They kind of let the guests carry it. You and I have had some interesting conversations over the years, often where we'll disagree. I remember that it's kind of like, this is your life. I like this show.
I know. I was thinking that.
I remember when I was on talking about my book a couple of years ago, and I literally frightened you somewhere on the episode.
Yes.
You're like, stop it.
Yes.
You're scaring me, because I was talking about how after death we would all meld into this great link, like in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And you were like, no, I want to retain my individuality. And I said, well, I don't think it works that way, Tim. And you're like, no, stop it. You're scaring me. And I thought, well, this is fun. You know, this is, you don't hear this on many. I did a ton of interviews for that book on podcasts and radios. I was even on Coast to Coast. And, I never had, I didn't have that kind of visceral interaction with a host where you're not just doing a, hey, this is an interview. It's, you know, it's like, yeah, we're having a conversation here. And it's going in really weird places. Greg Bishop, he's the only other one I would have a conversation with that, like that with. But I never frightened Greg. You were the only one that I actually was like, stop it, stop it. And I just kept going.
Yeah, I actually mentioned that exchange back in last month when I had Red Pill Junkie on, because we were sort of talking about that idea of, like, when you die, you assimilate into, like, a hive, you know, and it's like, do you retain the person, you know? We got into all that. It was like PTSD for me. I was like, oh, no, I don't want to even think about this stuff, dude. Like, well, I want to retain myself. And, you know, Red Pill was like, what is self? I'm like, oh, Jesus, no.
You're worse than Kimball.
What is self? Oh,
well,
man.
Just think about it.
Well, it was fun. And like I've said to lots and lots of people, you know, just because we're wrapping up, this is just the end of the seasonal format. I mean, I don't plan on, like, finishing season 10 and then being, like a pro wrestler and turning around and going, now I'm back under a mask with a new name. You know what I mean? I'm not going to do anything stupid like that.
That would be awesome.
You know, but I'll be back in some form or fashion.
I would pay to see you do a show with a mask on. That would be, and Red Pill Junkie is your guest without a mask on. That would be awesome.
There you go.
Be like the anti-luchador of paranormal podcasting. So just think about it. In 2006, when I was first on, if I had told you that the last time I'm going to be on your show in its current incarnation, the Chicago Cubs will have won the World Series and Donald Trump will be president of the United States, you would have said, I'm never having this guy on the show again. He's crazy. But here we are.
Yeah, yeah. And to throw a little, to throw a classic dig in at the UFO subject, if you had told me those two things and that UFOs had landed and asked me which of the three would be that I didn't believe, I probably wouldn't have guessed that we still wouldn't have the UFOs. It's like, what, the Cubs won the World Series, Donald Trump is the president, and the UFOs are still on here? Like, what's it going to take, man? What's it going to take?
Stephen Bassett had his countdown.
And you can replace that with,
or,
like, anything, Bigfoot, whatever. It's like,
yeah.
It's like,
Bassett had
it's
his
like
disclosure
the completely
clock
crazy
all
stuff.
Wrong. It should have been like, you know, he would have made more money gambling on Trump as president than he would, you know, betting on UFOs landing on the White House lawn. So that's what happens when they turned on the Large Hadron Collider. We slipped into an alternate universe and we just haven't realized it yet.
Yeah, it's that Berenstein Bears effect, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. I never did a show on that one either. Yeah.
we're in a bad episode of Sliders with Jerry O'Connell, or it was Jerry O'Connell, I think. Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Folks are like, oh, I can't believe it. These are like two old people reminiscing about the past, which is exactly what we've become. So there you go. That'll be the rest of the show.
Yeah. Hey, man. They know what to expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got the new series now, Haunted.
Yes.
Is that thing again? Haunted.
Yeah.
Is this, what, how did you end up deciding to, is it the same, I could have sworn the series had a different name before, right? Wasn't it Haunted Maritimes or something?
No, the old series was called Ghost Cases. And,
okay, that's what I thought.
Right. Yeah, and I did that with a partner, and he and I split up, and he kept the rights to it. So I still wanted to do a, well, you know what, it was 8 years, so I never thought I'd do another ghost show, to be honest. In fact, I never thought I'd do another paranormal show at all. I moved into feature films and was it became reasonably successful. My last feature film a year ago had a festival run of 65, 70 festivals we get in and won multiple awards and stuff, so I was doing fine. But then this opportunity to do a ghost show landed my lap, and actually I have pro wrestling to thank for it. So, which is a weird story in and of itself, but when the opportunity to pitch a network on the ghost show came about because I was in talking to them about a pro wrestling series that we all sort of agreed we weren't going to become involved in. But I said, while I'm here, you know, good to see you again. And, you know, well, would I wouldn't, maybe a ghost show. They went, would it be you and Holly? And I said, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And they went, well, fine, we'll take you and Holly. And Holly was living out in British Columbia, so I had to send her an email when I got home and said, hey, Holly, would you be willing to move back to Nova Scotia with your boyfriend and do another ghost show with me? Please say yes. And so she said yes, and, you know, off we went. And so we're just wrapping up the post-production on season one. It's airing. Actually, there was an episode, the eighth episode in the first season aired 8:30 your time. So I was finishing watching it to make sure nothing went wrong as they aired it. Just as I called you, just, you know, here we go with this. So we've been renewed for a second season, and they tell me we'll be good for a third season too. So, so I'll be busy ghost hunting or investigating or whatever for the next year or so. Full time gig. Weird.
Yeah, hey. If you can get a full-time gig in the paranormal, go for it. They're few and far between, but they're worth it. Now, what channel, how does this work up there? What channel is that on? And how come they don't just bring it, how come they can't just get it out here in America?
It's on a regional channel called Eastlink TV up here in Canada. So it airs first in the Atlantic Canadian region, and it's like Netflix. They're a cable company. So there's two cable providers, Eastlink and another one I won't name, because I work
there
for
Eastlink.
There you go, good. And so it's kind of like
Netflix.
Monday
Night War style.
Exactly, man. Like they're the TNA and we're the WWE. Yeah, they're not even TNA. So you subscribe to Eastlink, and about half the people in the Atlantic region do, then they get it, and the subscribers to the other channel don't. So it's like Netflix in that sense. You have to be a subscriber.
Right.
It'll eventually wind its way across Canada because they have affiliates in Alberta and Ontario and BC and a couple other provinces. But we'll be getting it up on iTunes next year. Probably we're looking at February or March, I think. It won't be available in Canada because Eastlink is exclusive to them in Canada. So we'll be geo-blocking it in Canada. But if you live in the rest of the world, then you'll be able to watch it on iTunes. And at some point, probably, like, you can watch Ghost Cases. It's up on Amazon Prime, I think, and has been for a couple of years. So, yeah, people in the U.S. or elsewhere will be able to watch Haunted sometime starting probably late winter of 2018.
Well, you need to, here's what I want you to do.
Okay.
That sounds ominous. I want you to tap into this. You got to tap into this, into the ghost like community stream, in a sense. I want to see you sort of like embed yourself into this, because as I was asking you, like, oh, what channel is it on? Shit, it's like, how come I hear about all these events? How come I never see Paul at any of these ghost events? Because they don't know about the series yet. So I hope that I want you to be appearing like in Biloxi at Scarefest with the various ghost people. I think it would be fascinating to hear about.
Well, if you want to become my manager and book those gigs for me, sure. But remember,
I'll try.
Remember how successful I was at getting invited to UFO conferences over the years?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Weirdly,
well, they're a more welcoming group over there in the ghost world.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And weirdly enough, I would probably play better in the ghost world because in the UFO world, I developed a reputation as a bit of a skeptic. And I certainly am when it comes to the extraterrestrial hypothesis. So if you're not on board with the ETH, you're immediately, in terms of like about 90% of all UFO conferences, they don't care. They don't want to hear from you. So that's fine. The ghost thing is different. While I offer different theories for the ghosts than, hey, it's your dead grandmother, come back to haunt your house or something, I don't say none of this happens. In fact, because I'm taking a much more experiential point of view, where I'm actually out, as they say, quotation marks, in the field, investigating house and location after location after location, weirdly enough, I would be well suited to do those kind of gigs. So if anyone's listening and they want to invite me, I'm easy to find on the internet. And that would be fun. I'd enjoy it. Cause as you know, I've done the East Coast Para Conference up here for the last 3 years and I really like it. I like going and talking about these experiences a lot more than I ever enjoyed talking about UFOs, which I did. I went to some conferences and would do the top 10 UFO list or whatever. And you know, it's okay. But UFOs for me was always really kind of a job mixed in with a bit of a hobby. And that's fine. But the ghost thing is much more personal for me. And some of that has
even
to do with
the fact
that...
Even though it is a job.
Right. So I'm lucky I get paid for it, but it's something that you can do. So you can, unless you're Stephen Greer and you think you can go sit in the desert and make contact with space aliens, there's not really a lot you can do in terms of getting out and experiencing UFOs. I don't believe you can call them down wherever they're from. If space aliens. Weirdly enough, as we've talked about in past shows, I do believe that UFOs and ghosts and all this stuff is probably related. So what I'm experiencing with ghosts, in quotation marks, might be what somebody else experiences with UFOs. So maybe in that sense, you can call them down. But with the ghost thing, I can walk into a haunted house or a haunted museum. You've done it too. Two of the locations.
Yeah, I've been on several ghost hunts now.
Yeah, and two of the locations we used in season one
of
Haunted. you've been to the Astor Theater in Liverpool twice, and I think you were at the
Queen's
County
Museum.
Yeah,
that was the premiere of the show, which was awesome because our friend Linda Rafuse was the main person. You know, she was the face of the museum.
Yep, and you know, I took the opportunity in that episode to try and make contact with Mac Tonies because he and I used to joke. Which is really kind of dark humor now, given what happened, Mac passing away so young. But we used to joke that we'd do a Harry Houdini thing, like whichever one of us went first, come back and talk to the other one, make contact somehow. Well, I always thought it would be me because I was 10 years older than him, and he seemed like he was in better health anyway, and it didn't work out that way. But so I had the opportunity. I said, hey, first time back. Doing a ghost series because he died just a couple weeks after Ghost Cases premiered back in 2009. And we only did one season. So I never got a chance to go do a second season where I could try and contact him. So I said, hey, here's the first opportunity I've had to talk to Mac Tonies. If he is out there, I'm going to try and do that. And weirdness ensues immediately. Like literally, I think you've seen the episode. As soon as
I have seen the episode.
Stuff. That seems linked to him starts to happen. And that I have to admit, you know, that was my first night back at it. And it's like, wow, okay, is this what this ride's going to be like? And it turns out that episode those two episodes, cause each location has a two episode cliffhanger. So there's, you know, part one goes and then, hey, next week you'll see how this all, you know, does Paul get eaten by a demon or something? Yeah.
I wasn't sure what that formatting was.
Yeah, so we did six locations, six in the first season, or seven, sorry. And so each is a two-parter. The episodes are half an hour long, and so really an hour in full. But we cut them in the middle and say, here's your cliffhanger, and we don't know what's going to happen next week. Dun-dun-dun. And then the 13th episode of the season, because they go 13, will be a season-ending cliffhanger that comes out, I think, in the first week in January. And it's like, well, you know, clearly I'm still alive, so none of us died, but what happens? Well, okay, stay tuned, because in a month we'll be starting season two, and you'll see whether Paul and Holly get killed by a demon or something. And when folks think I'm joking when I say demons, turns out, you know, maybe I'm not joking. And I named the show Haunted because even going in, Holly and I were still haunted literally and figuratively, more figuratively, I think, by what had happened to us 8 years ago. Like some of the experiences we'd had, we had never fully rationalized them. So the show actually, unlike a lot of ghost shows, is much more about us, or it's as much about us as it is the places we go and our journey. And, the places we go might be haunted. And we might be haunted. And we came to the idea that as we were going along, you know, maybe we joked. Somebody told us one of the places we were going into, the stories were all fake, that the locals had made them all up, you know, kind of thing. And we just looked at each other and said, well, that's cool. If there aren't any ghosts in there when we get there, we're pretty sure we have a few that we can leave behind that are traveling with us. So that's cool. We'll leave some ghosts for you people. And that wound up being one of the most interesting and exciting and scary locations that we went to. So, yeah, it was a real roller coaster ride. And I can't wait to get out and do it again.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awesome, actually. You know, I was talking with Go Rightly, because I'm in a movie with Go Rightly that's coming out next year. I have a tiny role, but I'm in a movie. And The Hill and the Hole, coming out next year, folks. And I was telling him, I was really blown away, because I only did like one scene one night. I was like, I have a name, but I'm and one line, I think, so... But at least I got a name. So I was there one night, and I kind of experienced the filmmaking process for the first time, like since I was just a little asshole in college when I had took like film classes. It was completely that was like almost 20 years ago, so it was completely different. But what amazed me beyond the technical part of it was something that I did notice from back then. It's sort of like this camaraderie and sort of like, you know, it's like a rock band together or something like that. It's like, it's a very intimate group of people making this product or whatever, this film or in this case TV show. And it's really a cool sort of like group dynamic in this like small, tight-knit little, like almost like a family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
Every film crew is like that. The good ones are like that. The bad ones, they're still like a family, but, you know, a feuding family kind of thing. So,
yeah, they're like ready to go back home from the holidays, yeah.
I can't wait to kill you, and after you're dead, I'm going to steal the money from the inheritance from all my other brothers and sisters kind of family. Some of those film crews exist, but I've never worked on one of those. I've always been lucky to be surrounded by talented people who are also good people, and we enjoy each other's company. So the director, Dylan and Chelsea, Dylan Garland, our director of photography, Chelsea Camo, our young sound person, and my brother, Jim, who was there as our production manager, they all wind up as cast members, really, in Haunted, because you can't do one of these things and go into these haunted locations and not have something happen to you. And this time, we decided to include everyone. So every now and then,
right.
Dylan will hand the camera over to me, and I'll start shooting him. And I'll say, what are you experiencing right now? It's really cold, Paul, kind of thing, or whatever. And I'll go, okay, cool, this camera is really heavy. Can you take it back now? But, you know, we do stuff like that. And as the season moved on, we started using GoPros more and more and giving everybody – and some of the footage – Holly shot some footage on her cell phone, and because there was no camera crew with her. She was just wandering through a particular area of the old Yarmouth jail, which was on tonight, and something happened. She heard a sound, and as she was walking through, she was just taking a video of the section of the jail that she hadn't been in yet, she just wanted to take a video of it, and something happened. And so that winds up in the show. I filmed a number of segments for the series on my iPad just because the crew was somewhere else and had the camera somewhere else. So I said, well, okay, I'll just use my iPad. And that led to some cool stuff happening as well. So the great thing about technology now is, you know, you don't need to lug around a massive beta camera with beta tapes like I used to have to do when I was shooting Dan Friedman Is Real or any of those old entries. Now with high def, you can go a couple of GoPros, an iPad, and a couple of phones, and you'd be good to go. Now we also have, you know, a Blackmagic 4K high def camera. Or actually two now. So we have that as well, and TV cameras and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, what audiences want to see is something happening. And if all you have is a phone camera when something's happening, then use that, which, you know, brings me to Lance Moody, because I think he's right when he says that the answer to the UFO phenomenon is pocket, a cell phone camera. So there should be more photos and video of UFOs if there really were UFOs flying around out there. And yet there isn't credible video and photos, even though everybody has a camera in their pocket. The interesting thing for us with the ghost thing is we actually have cool evidence and cool video and cool audio that's come from cell phone cameras and iPads. So, and if we can do it, you would think somebody out there must be getting, that is not third phase of the moon or something, getting quality cell phone footage or photos of UFOs. And yet, where are they? So that's, you know, that's Lance's point about why the UFO phenomenon is dying or whatever. And if it ever, if they ever were here, they're not here anymore, which is something Carl Flock would have said and believed. So I find that interesting. In my own experience with the ghost thing, sort of, to me at least, bears it out, because we can use any of these devices and stuff still happens. But with UFOs, it's, you don't see that stuff. So that, that should be of interest to anyone. It should make them go, what's that all about?
Yeah, that was an interesting pivot. I didn't see that coming. Yeah, well, UFOs, they're just so, they just feel so lame now, you know. They just have this sort of lameness to them that it's like, ugh, you know. And but in their defense, I guess, you I think you kind of mentioned this earlier, unless you're Stephen Greer, it's like, and that's in quotes, you know, you can't, if you're going to a haunted location, you know stuff's happened there before, or at least reportedly, because I guess in that one place where they claimed it was all local lore. But
right,
with UFOs, you pretty much you're at the mercy of the phenomenon there.
Yeah, you are. But I think that's true of the ghost thing too. And you know, our houses and locations really haunted? Maybe. Or are the people that live there the ones that are haunted? And so I really like Greg's idea, Greg Bishop's idea, of the co-creation. I don't know if it's in the hypothesis. Well, I'll call it an hypothesis. The co-creation hypothesis, which is we're integrally involved in creating the interaction between whatever the phenomena is. So as I've said over the years, and as you might recall from your previous shows, you know, it's like a movie theater. You can't actually go see the movie if you don't buy a ticket, or you don't subscribe to Netflix. I have to change my analogy because nobody goes to see movies anymore. But you know, you can't actually watch Netflix unless you subscribe to it. If you want to see what's on Netflix, you have to pay to, I assume, I do it legally anyway.
Yes.
And so, but if you and I both subscribe to Netflix, we're both watching something, but you're watching something probably different than I am. I'm probably watching Iron Fist for the third time and going, how could they have made this? And I don't know what you're watching, but, you know, but it's that idea that you have to get in there and get involved and open yourself up to whatever the experience is. So in that sense, this is going to sound really weird coming from me. I have some sympathy. Sympathy is the wrong word. But I'll use it. I have some sympathy with Greer. And at least the idea, yeah, I know, not really, because he's a fraud, but the idea that he has, the idea that he has used to lure people in, I don't think is a bad idea, which is you could go out, and if there is something out there, make contact with it by opening yourself up to it, which is what we do with the ghost thing. So if there is some sort of alien intelligence out there from Zeta Reticuli or whatever, I think it's reasonable to assume you could go out in the desert or wherever and open yourself up to contact. And if they're really out there, they could or would contact you. That doesn't mean – so that's my sympathy with Greer. And I'm not sympathetic because I think he's using what is a valid idea for you know, illicit purposes, whether to form a cult
make
money or whatever. But the idea itself, I actually think has merit. So – and that kind of goes back to
I'd like
contactees.
To see somebody try that in a sense. I think Ren Collier mentioned that on the show a few months ago, where it was like, yeah, if you go to the same place, you know, if you create sort of a routine or a ritual out of something like that, if you go to the same, like if you go to a field in your house every night for like a month, something's going to happen, possibly, or it's worth trying.
Yeah.
I guess the idea.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
I don't know if anything's going to happen. I predict something will happen.
Something, you know, in the Trumpian world that we're something probably would happen just because we're in an alternate bizarro universe. So this is, if ever anybody was going to try stuff like this, this is the time, because clearly we've slipped into the 12th dimension or something. So all bets are off as far as I'm concerned. I'm not kidding, folks. In a world where Donald Trump, if you grew up in the 80s and you're old enough to remember it, and we're living in a world where Donald Trump is president, really, we've jumped the shark so far that we can't even see the water anymore. And that's not meant as a comment on whether he's a good president or not. I mean, clearly he's not. But, you know, I'd stay away from that. Just the fact he's president is crazy that could have happened. So all to me, even though it seems like everybody hates him except people in ufology, but to me, it's a life-affirming thing. Because it's like, if that racist lunatic can actually become president of the United States, well, you know what? It's like that little poster of the kitten. You go, little kitten. You can do it. I sort of said, well, I can make a television show again then. Sure, I thought I'd never make another one. But now I can do whatever I want. I can do anything. Because clearly anything's possible. So thank you, President Trump, for that. Even as I've probably just been banned from traveling to the United States for saying you're a racist lunatic. Yeah, I can live with that.
Oh, they can't ban everyone. So,
wait,
I think you'll be okay.
Wait for it, Tim. It's coming.
Yeah.
It'll be like The Handmaid's Tale. Who knew that The Handmaid's Tale was a documentary in the making? Yeah.
No, it'll be really scary when they won't let us leave. When people are like, all right, I've had enough, I'm out of here. And they're like, yeah, you're not leaving America. You're here. You're stuck.
Yeah. It won't be your guys preventing you from leaving. It'll be the rest of us that build a wall. And you know what, folks? I say that with great love and affection for all my American friends. I love the United States. I just don't like your current administration, but that's all right. But, you know, you can see that Aaron Gullius and I did a podcast, which I haven't released. So we're delving off into UFOs, but this is just like a scatterbrained, yeah, that too, but a scattershot approach to our final show together, I guess. We did a podcast 2 months ago that I haven't released yet, where we talked about the influence of the far right or fascism or neo-Nazis on ufology, extending back for decades, and how, in particular, neo-Nazis have used ufology largely because they realize that they're the most gullible people. So if you're looking for people who are going to believe in conspiracies, the first place you want to stop is ufology, which is not to say everybody's interested in UFOs is gullible, but there's a fair number of people that neo-Nazis like Ernst Zundel honed in on early on and said, yeah, we can use this. So a lot of the sort of myths and legends about like Nazi flying saucers and bases on the Antarctic and the South Pole came from these neo-Nazi guys who were trying to recruit. There's a great book by a Canadian, Warren Kinsella, called Web of Hate, where he talks about hate groups and all that sort of stuff. And he devotes a not insignificant amount of time to talking about Ernst Zundel, famous Holocaust denier here in Canada, who we eventually shipped back to Germany, who began his career as a Holocaust denier and as a neo-Nazi hate monger with UFOs. He ran a UFO zine. And he used the UFO zine to lure people in. So it's one of those it's not really talked about much within ufology, and it's kind of been buried that there has been this sort of right-wing slant to a lot of it. And when I say right-wing, I don't mean George Bush. I mean like, you know, fascist right-wing, way over there. And yet now it seems to be bubbling up again. And some of that has to do with the Trumpian phenomenon. But when you see guys, so what Aaron and I were talking about in particular was John Ventre, the MUFON guy who, you know, go ahead and sue me, John, if you want, the racist. MUFON had an awful
lot
of trouble.
Don't sue me, just sue Paul.
Yeah, sue me, right, yeah. Good luck with that, because I'll win, because all I have to do is post your tweets, and I'm fine. But, you know, like, the fact that MUFON, which I never had a whole lot of respect for in the first place, but I always kind of at least assumed they were good people, you know, well-meaning people. And yet this guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They go
their intentions are good. Something you say about sort of like a moron, you know. It's like,
right.
Well,
yes.
It's not MUFON, it's a moron, but it's the same thing. It's sort of like, well, his intentions are good. He's just inept and moronic and dumb. That's kind of how I feel
about people. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it turns out not so much. I mean, good for the people who left, but like, how do you not, when that happens, any rational, reasonable organization immediately cuts their ties with this person, disavows them totally, and says, this is not what we're about and we won't tolerate this behavior. Nope, not MUFON. MUFON just goes, well, you know, everybody has their own opinions and it's all cool. And he donated $5,000 or whatever. And, you know, so that's the world of ufology that we were sort of wandered into and have been for quite a long time. And it's all coming to a head now. So when folks say to me, why do you like doing the ghost stuff so much? I go, well, you know what? I haven't noticed any of that behavior in the ghost world. I'm just saying. Like, though, you know, there's still crazy people in the ghost thing and whatever, but they're all good people. I have not met anybody in the ghost world at all who wants to talk about politics. They just want to talk about ghosts. And that's cool, because now in ufology, it all seems to be about politics and not my kind of politics. So that's one of the reasons why I'm less interested in UFOs than I used to be, sadly.
Well, there's not much to talk about with UFOs until you get in. Then you get into the interpersonal shit, and it leads to politics. You know what I mean? It's like, because yeah, the UFOs themselves are boring as shit. They haven't done anything in years. So it's like, we're like a, well, not us, but, you know, the people, I guess, talking about it. It's like talking about an old band that hasn't, you know, in like 20 years, it'll be like us talking about Tom Petty. It'll be like, oh, wasn't it great? Wasn't the shit great? You know, it's like Elvis. It's like it's gone, man. It's like there's really nothing, you know. The UFO phenomenon as we knew it, I think, is like doesn't exist anymore.
All right. First of all, Elvis will never be gone. And secondly, it's too soon, man. It's too soon to be making Tom Petty jokes. It's that cut.
That wasn't
deep.
A joke. That was a that wasn't a joke at all. I was searching for an analogy. So I wasn't trying to make light of that at all.
There we go. I feel better now that I can hear the pork.
There you go.
That makes me feel better. Like what's left of ufology? And so you hear, I've heard people complain about Greg, for instance, and I think you and Greg will do these year-end UFO wrap-up shows or whatever, and you hear folks complain about you and say, God, these guys, they're so bitter. All they do is complain. Well, yeah, but that's because all that there is, you know, stuff to complain about. And I used to try and say, this is crazy. Like, if you want to believe in space aliens, Zeta Reticuli, cool. That should be fun. That should be really fun and wild and crazy and whacked out. And, you know, like, just, it's like watching Thor Ragnarok. Think of all the strange things, or Doctor Strange. Just imagine it's like a Steve Ditko kind of comic book or something with some really psychedelic, trippy stuff. Who knows what aliens are like? Who knows? But, like, let's expand the outer limits of our mind and think about what this could be. And somehow over the last 20, 30 years, because of conspiracism and all that sort of stuff, they've turned it into a really bad episode of The X-Files. Not one of the good ones, but a bad one where it's like, oh, okay.
Right.
Oh, now we have to have the citizens hearing on UFOs. And it's not about lights in the sky. It's about lies on the ground. And stop it. Like, you know, aliens are not getting off spaceships and walking up to Dwight Eisenhower and doing a handshake and coming up with a secret treaty with bases with 14 different species or whatever. And I just stop it. If there are space aliens coming from here, that's A, really cool, and B, it's going to be really freaking weird. And you guys have just taken something that's really interesting and weird and should be special and mind blowing, and you've turned it into the the paranormal equivalent of gray, not gray aliens, but literally gray. And it's kind of a really good metaphor that the aliens eventually all basically became gray, because it used to be you'd have like all sorts of different types, goblin aliens and giant lizard aliens.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And eventually, over the last 25 years, thank you, Whitley Strieber, they've basically all turned in. They're gray. I mean, it's a metaphor for what ufology has become, just this gray sludge of blah. And there are.
Yeah, exactly. Even the creature itself is completely nondescript, fucking little.
Yeah.
It's like your generic humanoid. It's just a little humanoid.
Yep. And so we still get really weird stuff. Every time we go out and do the ghost thing, all sorts of crazy, weird stuff happens. Fun. I have fun with UFOs listening to people like Greg and you and Red and a few others talk, because they're still willing to have those weirdo conversations. thought mainstream ufology, which is a really strange term when I think about it, is there's nothing there that interests me in the least, because it's not about UFOs. It's just about the people, and most of them, frankly, aren't very nice people anymore. So or very interesting people.
Yeah,
so I have no interest in them. So any residual interest I have is maybe in the phenomena.
Right, right. And, I mean, I'll even cop to falling into this mindset myself sometimes, but maybe it's sort of like the mindset that you pick up from the field, but it's like it has, in the decade plus I've been mixed up in all this, it's like has a certain air of, like, being aggrieved. It's like this sort of, like, it's like always, like, crying about, like, sort of, like, that they're owed something, you know?
Yeah.
And all the other fields are kind of like, you know, with the exception of, like, hardcore conspiracy fields, like, you know, like a 9/11 or something like that, you don't get that vibe from, like, Bigfoot and ghosts, you know? It's like, nobody owes you anything, man. Like, you don't, if you want to go and figure it out, go for it. But, like, nobody owes you the answer about UFOs. But ufology seems to have taken on this sort of cloak of being aggrieved, where it's like, you owe us. You won't tell us. It's not fair. It's like, man, grow up. You're all, like, 60-year-old men. Like, grow up. Like, get a grip.
Yeah, Lance Moody, I think, makes a lot of good points. And one of the points, I think he did a lecture in Ohio at a skeptics group recently. I think it was Cincinnati, but maybe it was Cleveland. I don't know. And I think the title of his talk was something along the lines of how UFOs made America stupid, or elected Trump or something like that. But his point was that UFOs were part – the conspiracy part of UFOs are part and parcel of the dumbing down of America, because it's just on a whole host of levels that you see now starting to infiltrate into political discourse and also the direction your country's headed in. And it's not just your country. It's other countries too. So, you know, things like virulent nationalism, which we thought we had ended after the Second World War – is now coming back. And we started to see it in the Bosnian crisis 20 years ago and in the war 25 years ago now in the wars there. But all the sort of social ills that lead to wars and death and destruction, we at least thought in the first world we had moved beyond that. And it turns out in nature, but some of it too is just a healthy distrust of authority is not a bad thing. But an absolute, complete, unreasoning distrust of all authority is a bad thing. And I think that's where we've moved to. And within ufology, years ago, there used to be a distrust of authority, but it wasn't complete. There was still an idea that, yes, there were people, even at its worst, people who would say, there are people within the government who are trying to help us. The government might have, assuming it's space aliens, might have legitimate reasons for covering this up. Or at least had legitimate reasons, but maybe if we just approach them in a reasonable way now, we can work some sort of deal, blah, 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 whatever. And that was the worst case scenario. Now, you're quite right. Everybody is aggrieved about everything, and they trust no one. And like, you know, Chris Carter was right, trust no one. Everybody took his word. And I just think that's not a healthy state of affairs. So there are people that, you know, we can trust, especially if we don't have any evidence that they're not being honest with us. And the government is not completely untrustworthy. They're not all bad. And to this day, nobody has shown me, this is why your listeners hate me, nobody has shown me any proof that I could go into a court of law and convince a jury of 12 citizens that there is a massive government conspiracy withholding the truth of the alien presence on planet Earth. And the problem is, to me, Stephen Bassett and his ilk go out and say, yes, we have that evidence. And then they present it, and, you know, mainstream people just sort of go, that's crazy. And there was a real opportunity, there still is a real opportunity, to have reasonable conversations. I've talked to politicians, scientists about UFOs over the years, and if you're in a room alone with them, they have no problem talking about it. In fact, they're often interested about the idea of alien life, which has become more palatable over the years since you and I would have first talked in 2006. you know, we've discovered more and more exoplanets. And most people, I think, most intelligent people probably think that we're not alone in the universe. The question is whether it's coming here or not. So you can have those conversations. It just makes it it's virtually impossible to have them in polite company anymore about UFOs and the idea that maybe something did visit here, because the field itself has become so toxic and crazy, it's all anybody thinks of is the crazy people. Now with ghosts, totally different. I can talk. In fact, some of the people who watch my shows are politicians. I know them. I ran for office here in Canada this past year. It was a great year for me. I got married. I got a new television show.
Congratulations.
And I ran for elected office, and I lost. But the reason I lost wasn't because I had made documentaries about UFOs or ghosts. Nobody cared. They wanted to talk about healthcare and stuff. Fine. But every now and then I'd run into somebody who didn't want to talk and say, you're a crazy guy who believes in space aliens or something, or you ghost hunter. They would say, what you do is really cool. Like, it's amazing. You get to go to these haunted houses and you get to make films about space aliens and or whatever. And I went, yeah, it is really cool. Now, back to healthcare. But, it, you know, in the U.S., if you were trying to run and you were a filmmaker who had made documentaries about UFOs and you were the host of a ghost hunting show, I don't know if you could get away with that south of the border. But up here, it wasn't a problem. So anyway, I've rambled on. Sorry, I'm sure you have questions. This is like, sorry, that
yeah,
was like
I forget
a
where, yeah,
thing.
I
thing.
Let's
yeah, go back
well,
to the
yeah, there's a few different ideas crossed my mind. Yeah, hit the porg to give us a reset, a mental reset.
All right, here we go. There you go. So we're reset now.
Awesome. Am I going to get sued by Lucasfilms or Disney after this episode airs?
I hope so. No, yeah. I don't think so. They're selling these things like at, you know, Toys R Us. There's an entire shelf of them, so I'm pretty sure you're good.
There you go. Yeah. Well, to be fair, I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate in a sense, but again, to be fair to ufology, when you think about it too, it's like you and I, we know all these people, or we have a better understanding of the lay of the land when it comes to ufology and stuff. I confess to not really having that much depth of knowledge as far as the characters of these other fields, like cryptozoology, and I have a pretty good understanding of that one, but like ghost hunting and stuff, because I see things. I remember telling Greg Newkirk and Dana Newkirk when they were on the show, it's like, I see these conferences, like I was saying, I want you to be at Spooky Fest in Biloxi, and it's like, these people I've never heard of, and that's no slight to them, because they're like, presented, it's like wrestling style. It's like a completely, it's like seeing a whole different league. It's like seeing a Japanese league or something. It's like they're presented as the superstars of ghost hunting, and it's like, who are these people? So this is like a whole different world. So for all of our grousing about ufology, I'm sure the people in ghost hunting are like, they have their own issues and stuff like that. I mean, I'm positive of that.
Yeah, maybe. In fact, I've run into that a bit. There was a guy who has a ghost hunting or whatever group up here, a professional one, in Nova Scotia. And he has quite a large fan base on Facebook, I guess. And Holly and I were members of his group, and I'm not going to name it because I don't want to give him any free publicity. And it was a closed group, so you had to apply to join, and I think he's got like 15,000 members, and I guess he takes everyone. But so anyway, Holly and I joined because we just wanted to, we weren't publicizing our show. I had never posted there at all, and neither had she. But he kicked us out. He sought us out and kicked us out because we had a TV show and he didn't. And it's like, and then somebody told me that he was, he had posted something like, oh, I know those guys, they're not professionals. They cause more trouble than, you know, and so have us in and we'll fix whatever they harm they did. It's like, what are you talking about? We just went in and asked if there were any ghosts and did our thing and left. And professional ghost hunter, are you crazy? And why would you? So, yeah, there is a little bit of that. It's turf wars or whatever. Jealousy.
Was this recently?
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. It was. Well, you know him. He was a speaker at the Para conference last year, not this year, but the year before. The really dull guy who had, quote, evidence So he presented his evidence. You might not have gone to that lecture. Smart move. So he presents his evidence, which Linda Rafuse was there, and she just was shaking her head going, that's the best stuff he's got? Like, we get better stuff like that in one investigation, and that's his entire thing. And so, you know, yeah. I had the same reaction when I heard it. I said, we had better stuff on ghost cases, and if this is what a professional ghost hunter manages to get, what kind of equipment are you using? You know, what kind of equipment are you using, by the way, too? Like, that's the audio quality on your recording is terrible. You should invest in a Zoom, you know, recorder or something. You know, yeah. Higher quality. So, you know, there are some turf wars, but within the TV ghost world, as far as I know, you know, there's no this host hates that host. I kind of like, I don't know him personally, but I kind of like Zach Bagans and Ghost Adventures. I'm not really a fan of Ghost Hunters, never was. It's not personal. It's just
a lot of people don't like Zach Bagans.
I love him because he's entertaining and he sort of makes fun of himself, even though he pretends he's not making fun of himself. And the other thing to realize about any of these shows is that, you know, it's entertainment. So what we do is straight. We play it straight. In fact, we were criticized with Ghost Cases for being dull by some people. They said, we need more Zach Bagans or whatever. It's like, no, that's not how we roll. Everything you see us do really happened. We're playing it seriously. And if you see something cool and exciting, then that's because it really happened. But I have to admit, as a person watching a TV show, I love Ghost Adventures. In fact, while we would be out shooting, we would be staying at remember once we were in Yarmouth here and we stayed at an old sea captain's mansion and we came back from a night of ghost hunting and we sat down and there was a Ghost Adventures marathon on one of the cable channels. So we watched about 4 episodes, and it was hilarious. We were laughing and going, this is crazy. Stuff like this never really happens. But man, this is good television and it's fun. So no harm, no foul as far as I'm concerned. And if he every now and then they would actually find something that looks, you know, okay, that looks interesting. I'm not sure you really needed to surround it with all this fluff and excitability stuff. And oh, it's a demon. But I was possessed by Alex Jones there for a second. It's a demon.
I enjoy it. You turning the fish gay?
Yeah, the fish are turning gay.
Frogs. You know, frogs. You know what, I'm sorry, Alex. I'm
frog.
Sorry.
I think it was frogs. Yeah.
While
we're on the subject of Alex Jones, I actually watch Alex Jones every now and then just for entertainment, like to see, first of all, if his head's going to explode. You know who else I like? I will admit this. I like watching David Icke.
I love David Icke. I have no problems with David Icke.
It's just a Swiftian, like he's in on the joke and he's actually doesn't really believe any of what he's saying. He's using it as social criticism. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've heard that floated as a theory. Maybe it's true. I even like Greer. Like, you know what? At the end of the day, if people are dumb enough to give him their money and or whatever, even if it's not dumb, they feel like they're getting something out of it, I'm okay with that. Greer is entertaining. I've seen him speak live in person. I've watched him on his documentaries. He's entertaining. So as long as you don't take it too seriously, let me ask you this question, Tim, because you're familiar with both of them. Would you rather attend a lecture by Stephen Greer or, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of a good example. Jerry Clark, who is a fine UFO researcher, has been for 40 years. And he's not the dullest one either. It's just the one that I could think of. But, you know, Jerry's not the most lighting speaker. So is it Jerry Clark or Stephen Greer? Easy. I'll go buy
obviously
Clark's...
Stephen Greer, yeah.
Yeah, I'll buy Clark's book, but I'll go pay to see Stephen Greer speak. And, you know, that's kind of like saying I'll buy a rare album. I'll go see a punk play because, you know, the visceral experience of live music, you know, I really want like, and that's kind of what I look at the ufology thing, like punk rock, he's entertaining live. I couldn't read his books. Clark, less entertaining live, but his books are worth reading. So everybody has their role to play. Oh my God, I just said something nice about Stephen Greer. Whoa.
Yeah, you say you like him. You hit so many fucking things that I probably lost like half the points I thought of while you were talking, because I don't want to interrupt you because I'm a polite host and a wonderful person, my mom tells me. but I think I missed the guy presenting the evidence because I was out getting. Thank you. I think I missed the guy with the ghost evidence because I was out on a quest for growlers, probably in Liverpool. But to me, it's like you say that he kicked you. he's part of a professional group and kicked you guys out, and it's like, aren't you the ones who are getting paid to do this shit? Like this, I'm sure. He means by professional that, like, what? They're serious. It's like this guy's not. He's not a paid ghost hunter, right?
Not as far as I know. I honestly don't know if they get paid to do investigations. I hope not. Nobody should ever pay. Like, we don't get paid by the places we go to. I would never charge somebody who has a house or a museum or whatever. I wouldn't say, hey, look, give us $300 and we'll come investigate your house. No. I get paid by way of making the television show. We go and do these for free. So, in the sense of the people who own the houses or whatever don't have to pay us at all. They just have to put up with us for 12 hours.
It's just kind of like, unless your fucking job is to be a ghost hunter, don't call yourself a professional ghost hunter. That's all I ask. You're fucking not. That's it. I don't care how you make the money. If you go in the houses, if you're the psychic realtor, that's fine with me. You make a fine living doing it, then you're a professional ghost hunter. But if it's just because you think you have the latest little gadget and you take it seriously, that doesn't make you a professional ghost hunter.
Yeah, this is the Tim I know and love. Yeah, your voice raised there. You got a little cranky. I like it. There's no such thing as a professional. There's no such thing as a professional ghost hunter. I mean, seriously, there isn't. There are people who are, and this is why I love the ghost investigating thing. And I tell everyone, and when he kicked us out of his group, I think I posted something like, you know what? The great thing about ghost investigating is Holly and I just went to the Queens County Museum. Here's the fun thing. Any can do the exact same. You'll meet a nice lady who's there who runs the museum. If you say we're interested in ghosts, your ears up in a good way, because she's interested and she investigates ghosts and everything too down there. And then if she says, if you say to her, we saw the show Haunted that you were on, and these guys investigated this room over here, do you think we could go in there? I'm sure Linda would say yes. The point is that you can go to many of these places we go to, not a private home, of course, but any of these public places you can probably go to, like the Astor Theater in Liverpool, and try and experience what we experienced. That's the great thing. So it's a very the thing about the ghost thing is it's very democratic. Any of us can buy this ticket. You can do it in your own home. There's so many haunted homes in quotation marks in Nova Scotia alone, and I'm sure in Maine and throughout New England, actually everywhere, that you won't have any trouble finding a place to go. So then it's okay, how do you become a professional ghost hunter? Well, I don't really know, because either you ask somebody to pay you to go do those things, or you kind of try and differentiate yourself by saying, well, we take it seriously. We know how to use the K2 meter, and we know how to use the ghost box and what it's for. And, Paul and Holly don't. Well, you know what? First of all, as I was quoted as saying in a recent episode about a REM pod, the instruction manual for the REM pod is 2 pages long. And half of that was in Spanish. So it's 1 page in English. We're not dealing with technology that's coming from MIT here. So, and this idea that these tools are ghost detectors. No, they're not. Are you crazy? They're not ghost detectors. So you can't point it at a wall and go, is there a ghost, like, a something that measures radiation? Beep, 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 beep. Is there a ghost here? No. What these things, if they do anything, can do is they allow – so you don't control the relationship. So you can throw your professionalism out the window, because none of that matters. What matters is if there's something on the other side and it wants to contact you. So here's an interesting question for you, Tim. I'd be curious what your answer is. Two people walk into a allegedly haunted location. One of them is – the guy that kicked us out of the group, and the other one is Holly or me. Let's say Holly, because Holly's nicer. So we'll call this guy Earl, because that's his real name. and Holly walk into this haunted house, and you're a ghost or whatever it is, a non-human intelligence, whatever the force, the entity is on the other side. And so you can make contact with one of these two people. You can make contact with both of them if you wanted to, but you know, which one do you want to make contact with first? So here's Earl. Earl walks in. All right, I'm a professional ghost hunter, and I know you're this. I know what you are. You're the spirit of Bob, who used to live here, and I've got my device here, the K2 meter, which will detect you. And yes, I'm now detecting. And the ghost, I go, God, this guy is dull. Why would I want to talk to him? Ugh. Then Holly walks in and goes, hello, I'm approaching any entity that might be here with open arms, and I would like to have a conversation with you. I'm more interested in hearing what you have to say. Please communicate with me in any way that you can. And this is usually how Holly does it. And I'm thinking, if I'm the ghost, well, she seems nice, and she seems open-minded.
Right.
And she's not as...
She doesn't have all these, like, gadgets and shit.
She doesn't,
you know.
Yeah. So one guy, Earl, you know what he's got? He's got the answers. And you know what Holly's got? She's got questions. So if you're the ghost or whatever entity is, I just have to believe, and I can guarantee you from personal experience, they want to talk to the person who has questions, not the person who's coming to them and saying, you are this. No, I'm not. I know what I am. I'm a demon from the fourth level of hell, you little jerk. I'm literally going to eat your soul later tonight, dumbass. Oh, meanwhile, Holly, you seem nice. I'm not going to eat your soul at all. Do you have any questions? I'd be happy to answer them. You know, how do I get from the fourth level to the fifth level? I don't know. That's a good question, though. So, yeah, you know, that's what I think of professional ghost hunters. And I hate the term ghost hunter, too. You can be a ghost investigator or a ghost experiencer or a ghost adventurer if you want. Or perhaps maybe just a person, to paraphrase the old police song, I come here seeking knowledge. And if there's an entity of some sort here that could maybe give me an insight into the human condition or into what might be out for us beyond or any of those things, I'd be interested in talking to you or hearing from you. And then you open yourself up to it. And I guarantee you, you'll get a better reaction than if you walk in with a ton of gear. And we use the gear, too, because it's television. We have K2 meters and stuff. But we understand what they're for. They're opportunities for whatever might be out there to make themselves known to us on their timetable, on their schedule, when they want to, and how they want to. And we are not in control. They are. And as soon as you understand that, then you're good to go. The problem is, Earl doesn't really understand that. So I'm kind of glad he kicked us out.
Well, exactly. I think we hit,
Although apparently...
We've beaten on Earl.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, well,
he's a symptom of a lot of people like that. And, you know, the good ghost investigators, like there were a couple of folks, you met them, from the St. John, the Loyalist Paranormal Society, I think that's their name, from St. John, New Brunswick. They're great. They come to the para conference every year, and they're very open-minded and friendly and everything, and they use the approach that I was talking about Holly would use. Awesome. Those are the kind of people that you want to hang out with. And they, view themselves as much of like amateurs, I guess, if you will, as we do, just people seeking knowledge. And those are the people that you want to hang out with.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, again, not to belabor the point, and it sounds kind of petty, but again, it's like, I sound like an asshole, but I'll say, you know, it's like, if you're not, you don't necessarily have to be in this to make money, but if you're not making money, then you're not a professional. It irritates me so much. It's like, you just make up these terms and shit. It's like, get out of here with that shit. To jump off of a point you made earlier about how much you love Stephen Greer.
What?
See what I did there? I took that and just sort of like amplified it to the.
that was a Larry Bird-like pivot.
There you go. And those guys, it reminds me of sort of something I've said on the show on multiple occasions. I should come up with a clever theory name for it, like everybody else. But It's just, and you can imagine why it hasn't been presented at any conferences, because it's just the general idea that it's like, if you have a fucking problem with ufology, the less the problem is the stars and stuff and the people like the Stephen Greers and if you don't like David Icke, David Icke's, and the people that are like vilified. It's the audience, man. It's like, it's a consumer-driven thing. So turn the mirror around or whatever, you know, look at that. But it's not something you really want to say at a UFO conference where it's like, if you're pissed that the UFO field's gone astray, look in the fucking mirror, man. Like, you know, the consumers are the problem. And if people take more responsibility of what they consume, then, you know, we can have a better world of UFO research and all that other stuff, you know. Support quality shit and don't, you know.
Yeah, I agree. The problem is ufology, well, it's not a problem, but it's just a sad fact. Ufology doesn't matter. Probably never did. But I guess it matters to the people who are in it, but it's such a small clique. In the greater society as a whole, Stephen Bassett, Stephen Greer, I mean, I can go down the list, and I can include serious ufologists like Jerry Clark, too. None of them matter. None of them. Their social impact is nil. Stan Friedman, maybe had a bit of an impact, but... So you have to separate that, and then there's the other side of it, which is how many people in the United States, Canada, or France, or the UK, or whatever, have an interest in the idea of extraterrestrial life? Wow. Okay, well, a lot. Like, a lot. And how many have an interest in space travel? And it, whether it's science fiction or whether it's real or whatever, a lot, again. So I always thought that ufology... really, when they delved off into the conspiracy nut world, missed a trick, because there's a huge audience out there. And the problem is you never went after those people. You went literally most common denominator, the easy fruit on the tree. And you never had any ambition to climb higher and have a more enlightened conversation. A few did, like Jacques Vallée and some others. But by and large, ufology is a field that's been waiting in the quicksand for its entire existence. But you have no problem finding folks, any bar you walk into or anywhere you go, you can probably find a group of people that you can strike up a conversation with about the idea of extraterrestrial life. And you might even be able, if you go a bit and don't jump on them right off the bat with, they're coming here and they own the government. If you sort of work in the possibility after half an hour that, hey, what do you think of the idea that maybe they're more advanced than us and maybe they could have traveled here? You might actually find people more receptive to that approach. Unfortunately,
mythology, absolutely. I've experienced that.
Their approach is, they're coming here and you need to know it. And if you don't agree, you're part of
it. You deserve
them.
To know it.
Yes.
It's not just that you need to know it, you deserve to know it.
Free energy.
We're being screwed over because they won't tell us. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
they
have
a cure for cancer and
Oh yeah, and free energy, they have everything, yeah. It's bogus, yeah. But yeah, to me it's just like, and I guess, and I've said this before when I sort of go off on this tangent, but it's like, if you're hearing this, you're not part of that problem because you're consuming good shit. But it's like there are lots of people who buy the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure DVD set. God bless them. And people who, it's to millions of people who watch the Stephen Greer movie. So it's like the consumers, you know, the consumers are the problem as much as anything else. And if we want, we need more charismatic people putting forward different ideas in ufology. That's really sort of the thing.
Well, you do if you want to save ufology, whatever that is. I don't. I just want to find people you can have fun conversations with. But I will agree with this. That Banal of America is really high-grade, sort of homegrown, organic, good marijuana. And ufology in general is like crack cocaine or crystal meth. There is a qualitative difference. And one will open your mind and enlighten you and make you easy and mellow, and this is all cool. And the other one will turn your teeth black, and eventually you'll be robbing convenience stores. And that's ufology. Whereas you're the marijuana, you're the ayahuasca of ufological discourse.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I appreciate that. Nice.
You're as close as I'll ever get to ayahuasca. So.
Well, who knows? They're legalizing marijuana up there, so now they're trying to legalize mushrooms in California. So God knows what 20 years from now we'll be like having open access to ayahuasca.
That's right, baby. If you're a pothead living in the U.S., move to Canada. It's all legal, all the time, starting I think next June. So
yeah,
come on
I think. I think it's July 1st because I thought, unless they changed it, because they were mad, well, they were concerned that it was going to be legalized on Canada Day, that it would, I don't know,
only,
cause a run on
only
the tour.
Losers, only losers would be concerned about that, I think, from, and, I don't do marijuana. I just know plenty of people who do, but I think it'd be great if it was on Canada Day, and if every Canadian citizen who would be legally of age, I wouldn't want 12-year-old kids doing it or whatever, but every Canadian citizen went out and in a massive show of national unity sort of lit one up and went, dude, and then maybe sang the song from the Doug and Bob McKenzie, like gulu coo 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 kind of thing. that's how we should spend Canada Day.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah. I don't know if it's anything like 4th of July, but it's like everybody gets drunk on the 4th of July. No one's really sitting around getting stoned. So it seems I don't think they need to worry too much about it.
We it's the one day of the year we come out of our igloos and these beasts and ski down to a celebration of our national unity.
There you go. I actually got really into Canadian history when I was up there this summer. I became fascinated by. I know. I became fascinated by. I'd like to get a book on this. If you know of one that you could recommend, I'd appreciate it. Actually, for real, I'm not busting your chops. But I got really fat because when we went to Liverpool, I read that they were. I think it was Liverpool. That they were on the fence about what side to join in the Revolutionary War. And it, like, completely opened my mind, where I was like, wait a minute, what? There were people up here during the what were they all doing? And then I went into one of those, like, Google holes, where it was like, I need to learn as much as I can about this period in Canadian history, because I found out there was actually, like, 20 colonies and 13 split off, and formed America, and I think two of the 20 were like North and South Florida or some shit. And then a whole bunch of Canadian provinces that were like on the fence, and then they decided to stay. And then it was like, well, are they going to get absorbed by the uprising American thing? It's fascinating stuff.
It's an interesting perspective that I think Canadians are more familiar with than Americans, because of the idea you view yourself as the 13 colonies, right? And so separated and you were the only 13 colonies. No, there were other colonies. It was called British North America and the 13 colonies were part of that, but other parts stayed loyal for one reason or another, while you treasonous dogs rebelled against the empire. And, you know, eventually the loyalists wound up here. But I had relatives, I mean, distant ancestors, because my family's been big in genealogy. We've studied the history of this, who were involved in revolutionary activities in. And, you know, I had other ancestors who were involved in loyalist activities. So the short answer for you is there were two primary reasons why we didn't go full blown. You know, full bore in a number, but the two I would say, things how you asked. One, the very large British fleet, Halifax Harbor, it was one of the primary British ports. And two, we were having a revolution of our own at the time. There was a religious revival called the Great Awakening that was happening here, led by a guy I studied when I was a graduate student, Henry Allen, who is factored in to some of the things I've written about in my book, because he was very much a mystical Christian. And so he was launching a religious revolution against the Congregationalist and Anglican churches, or Church of England, here in the maritime colonies at that time, that really had our entire region, while you guys were wrapped up in a political revolution, it was more of a spiritual revolution taking place up here. And that turned a lot of people's attention away from more mundane earthly concerns. And his religious revival literally coincided, I think it started in about 1775, and it went until 1784 when he died of tuberculosis. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of factors in there, none of which I'm sure your audience care. Where are the UFOs? Why are they talking about this? But you brought it up. And, yeah, Canadian history is fascinating.
It's wicked interesting. I don't care what they think.
Yeah, no,
it's called fucking
right.
Banal of America.
That's right. It's not, you know. No, I was going to say Lemberg of America. I don't want to pick on Alfred because he wrote something on your wall laughing. And I like Alfred. So, but, you know, like Michael Reynolds of America or Greg Bishop of America. It's none of those things. It's Banal of America. So you can talk about whatever.
Yeah,
you want.
Like notice, there's no paranormal in the title, so I could relaunch the show as a NASCAR program, and I'd still be able to keep the name.
Sweet. So we can make the last half hour or so about pro wrestling. No.
That's definitely we'll try not to do a half hour, but yeah, I think we may end up there.
That's probably not going to happen.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
I used to be with it, but then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it, and what's it seems weird and scary to me. It'll happen to you.